this magic moment. So different and so new, was like any other, until I met you. And then it
happened. Hello there, this is John Forward, and this is episode 2 of the short-term series of podcasts that I've decided to call This Magic Moment, mostly after recording the last one, when I was figuring out what the opening theme song would be. I went on my computer and did a search through my old collection of MP3s. Basically all the music that I'd collected right up until I switched to streaming stuff. I did a search for the word magic, and This Magic Moment by Lou Reed was my favorite of the songs that came up in the search. I thought about maybe using Dirty Magic from an old Offspring album. But we went with Lou Reed, who has a slight edge over the Offspring in musical goodness. But anyway, this is episode 2. Episode 1 covered the first Harry Potter movie that I have seen for the first time as of yesterday. Today I've seen the second Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. And it's a better movie. I was pretty tepid on the first one. This one I still don't love it, but I enjoyed this one more than the previous one. But this it doesn't seem very structurally different than the first movie. It's kind of seems a little bit like a redo. This seems like an Evil Dead 2 type situation, where although this one isn't completely separate, it's still a continuation of the first movie, but it follows a lot of the same beats. I guess a more accurate thing would be like how the first of the new Star Wars trilogy kind of has similar beats of the first Star Wars movie. I'm not sure if that comparison holds up or not, but anyway, I took notes while I was watching it, so I've got more stuff written down than I did for the last one, but I also don't need to spend as much time talking about my background of having not seen this movie. So let's get right into it. There's some stuff that I noted that was either that goes along with some of the stuff I talked about last time, and just other general thoughts from the movie that relates to the first one. First off, Dumbledore still not dead, waiting for that shoe to drop. I forgot to mention it on the last podcast, but I did notice that they foreshadowed Dumbledore dying in the first movie, where somebody just goes out of their way to make a comment that Harry Potter will always be safe as long as Dumbledore is still alive. So obviously that's not going to be forever. Even after this, we got another taste of Harry Potter's horrible home life with his aunt and uncle and cousin, who all openly hate him. It's terrible, and I feel bad for Harry Potter, but I guess the ridiculously evil family is kind of the funnier parts of these movies so far, even though it's pretty tragic. Harry Potter is no longer sleeping in a cupboard below the stairs. He's been upgraded to his own bedroom, which I thought was really funny when the uncle mentioned that you know, Harry Potter's being such a bad boy and he should be thankful because they kindly gave Harry Potter Dudley's second room purely out of the kindness of their hearts. I thought that was a pretty funny thing. But yeah, they still openly hate him and want him to hide in his bedroom, and I can sympathize with the uncle because, you know, he was in the middle of telling a sweet joke in the living room, and Harry Potter's ruckus upstairs spoiled his punchline, which he went upstairs to yell at Harry Potter for heckling his set. So, so that whole thing. And then there's this, well, we'll get into what's his name, Dudley or Duty, Dobby. We'll get into him later. But anyway, the uncle Harry Potter gets in trouble. It was the room elf's fault, which we'll talk about more. But Harry Potter gets in trouble, so the uncle puts bars on his windows and refuses to send him back to Hogwarts. That's another thing I don't understand about this family dynamic. First, as I mentioned last time, I don't know why Dumbledore and the rest of them are subjecting Harry Potter to this terrible home life of abuse and neglect. But I also don't understand why they would want Harry Potter to stay home instead of going off to boarding school, since they hate his guts. Like, you would think that they'd be happy to get him out of the house, but that does not... I was also kind of surprised. The uncle is a portly man, and he didn't seem very handy, but, you know, he was pretty good at installing those bars on Harry Potter's window without too much bumbling from what we saw in the movie. But the whole Weasley gang comes to save Harry Potter by tearing the bars off the window of this house and ruining the front of this guy's house. Harry Potter's running away from home to go to boarding school, which is an odd dynamic. But anyway, they've also inserted a Weasley sister, which I don't think was mentioned in the first movie. They seem to be setting up Jenny, the Weasley sister, as a future love interest for Harry Potter, which I find a little bit creepy. They're starting in this movie with teasing future love stories, but these are... I think they're supposed to be 11 years old in the first movie. I assume a year has passed, so that they're 12, but that must be a weird casting thing. So you're reading for the part of Jenny Weasley, and we are hoping that someday in the future, as soon as it's not creepy, we are going to have you making out with Daniel Radcliffe on screen. How about that? And she's probably thrilled. They had a call back to Hermione. I have a hard time saying her name. Hermione? It doesn't roll off the tongue. Fixing Harry Potter's glasses. He makes a comment like, "I'll have to remember that one," which I thought was going to be called back somehow. But I don't know. Maybe he's just going to break his glasses in every movie and she's going to fix them. Or maybe she gets killed and he breaks his glasses and he's like, "Oh, if only Hermione was here, she'd fix my glasses." Another ridiculous classroom scene where the teacher just asks everybody for, "What's the definition of a mandrake?" And Hermione answers and gives a textbook paragraph on something, and 10 points to Gryffindor. And you know, the main trio looks at each other very excited that Gryffindor got 10 points. They did not, we don't find out who won the House Cup at the end of this movie. I thought the 10 points to Gryffindor was really the only time that the House Cup thing was mentioned. Which is for the best, because I don't think anybody was terrible. I was not invested in the point system or the House Cup as, you know, the target demographic, 37-year-old man for this children's movie. But yeah, back to the Gryffindor thing. Last time, I'm still confused as to kind of what the difference is between the different houses. That still hasn't been explained. Slytherin is still the house of sociopaths, I guess, which I'm still not sure why they exist. They're even pushing them more towards they're being straight up Nazis in this movie. I kind of mentioned that Malfoy was kind of a little Aryan punk in the last movie, but they've gone more explicit with it this one. They start throwing around the racist term mudblood for all the impure wizards that aren't of a pure, unmuddied up bloodline. And yeah, we tease that possibly Harry Potter is a secret Nazi and he didn't even know because he's got ties to the Slytherins. Yeah, we've also we had another game of Quidditch, and again a completely nonsensical game, and where everything right up until the last 10 seconds does not matter. It doesn't matter how many of the teammates got the ball through the hoop. Harry Potter catches the snitch at the end and negates his entire team's effort, and everybody's happy about this. More magic tampering at the Quidditch game again. The same thing happened in the first movie. They really should cast some sort of spell over the Quidditch field. If you're going to have a magical game with a magical audience, like, how... There's got to be rampant corruption and cheating in these Quidditch matches. They really should do something about that. But yeah, a lot of the same beats of the first movie. They put on the invisibility cloak again. They even say, it's time to get Dad's old cloak again. And, they have a whole scene of sneaking around to find the secret info about the secret bad thing that the secret bad guy is going to do at the school. The evil people of this universe seem very intent on, like, why aren't they wreaking havoc on the real world? Why is it all just, let's attack the school full of wizard children? And so that was interesting. But it's basically the same plot. Harry Potter, I still feels like, doesn't really have an arc. He still doesn't really have any agency in any of this stuff. He's not really struggling to get better at mastering his powers or anything, which is usually something that happens in movies like this. He's not working terribly hard to find anything. They tend to just stumble upon information by chance or by just dumb people with big mouths. Harry Potter and the other Scooby gang are not terribly good sleuths. As in the first movie, they just end up asking the right person, like, hey, what do you know about this thing? And then somebody says something, and they're like, oh, I shouldn't have told you that, that's what Hagrid did in the first movie. It was Dobby in this movie, which Dobby is the little elf, I think, or elf, or I don't remember what kind of a creature he is, but he lives in Harry Potter's bedroom or something. He's also working for Malfoy Senior, which I'm not really sure exactly how that works, but Dobby was a CGI creation. He's kind of the, who's the little guy in Lord of the Rings that loves his precious? I forget his name. Anyway, he seems to be that of the movie. Trying to stop Harry Potter from going to the school, which I'm still not entirely sure why that was. Maybe Malfoy didn't want to send Harry Potter because he didn't want him to thwart the plan, but the movie kind of red herrings us into thinking that the titular Chamber of Secrets is something that can only be opened by, like, the true descendant of the Slytherin leader dude, which we are strongly led to believe is Harry Potter. So we thought that Dobby was trying to stop Harry Potter from going to school because he's the descendant and, you know, stopping the prophecy and such, but then it turns out that Harry Potter's not the descendant. I guess Voldemort is. So I'm still not sure why Dobby wanted to stop Harry Potter from going to school. Maybe he wanted him to go to school, because maybe the whole I shouldn't have said that thing is just a subversion where that's just Harry Potter is dumb and they just want him to think that he's discovered this secret knowledge, but really they're steering him in a particular direction. But yeah, Dobby is annoying. He seems to be the Jar Jar Binks of the movie. I don't know how he was received by fans, or hopefully they write him out of future movies. I do not want to see any more of Dobby. I think Daniel Radcliffe, the actor who plays Harry Potter, probably doesn't want to see any more Dobby because he is terrible at acting with a CGI character, where on set he's just in an empty room probably talking to a tennis ball or something. But yeah, child actor Daniel Radcliffe, not good at performing one-sided scenes with an invisible CGI character. But yeah, so just terrible acting there. What else do I got in my notes? Some new stuff. We it seemed to have been setting up the groundskeeper guy to be the bad guy, red herring, at the beginning, but that lasted about 10 minutes before his cat got murdered and blood splattered all over the wall. This is a bit of a darker movie. But yeah, so but they set up, and the groundskeeper is constantly catching Harry Potter at a crime scene and saying, like, he did the crimes because he's at the scene. But everybody's like, oh no, it couldn't be Harry Potter. There's not really any conflict where Harry Potter gets, like, they set it up like he's being framed, but nobody ever believes for one second that he has actually done anything wrong. They know more of Harry Potter's history, I guess, than I do as a viewer, having only seen these two movies. But anyway, yeah, there's another thing. There's another time I mentioned in the last movie they don't really have any consequences for rule breaking, which I'm not really sure how, like, they act like it's a big deal not to follow the rules, but then they keep rewarding Harry Potter. So at the end of the movie, like, Dumbledore's like, you guys are really bad boys and I could throw you out, therefore you get some special awards for doing cool things. So I guess it was good that that Harry Potter didn't follow the rules. Daniel Radcliffe, in his role as Harry Potter, has a very awkward smile, I found. I don't think he knows how to smile. It feels like he was on set and the director's like, okay, smile. And Daniel Radcliffe is like, what do you mean? I don't know what that means. And they just were like, just show us your teeth. And then he's like, okay, I can do that. And then he just shows his teeth. And it doesn't look like a real smile. It just looks like he's an alien who has never smiled in his life, baring his teeth. I'm curious to see how the awkwardness of all of the actors progresses. Puberty has kicked in between the first and the second movie. Everybody has a deeper voice. Harry Potter looks a little bit, he looks less like a rambunctious wizard child in this movie than just, he's just more of a dork in this one. Ron looks the same, but he's got a deeper voice. Malfoy, the child one with his slicked bleach blonde hair, he pretty much looks the same. His voice is a little deeper, but he's not in the full throes of puberty yet. So, what else do we got? We've got more Hagrid, who seems to be played up. Like, this seems like somebody that is being pushed as, like, fan favorite character, but I don't see it. He's got some mystery to him. He's always in places where they're like, Hagrid, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, top secret. He was probably getting hookers in that alley at the beginning of it, but they seem to play up a lot that, that all of the children in Hogwarts just love Hagrid so much. Harry Potter and Ron Weasley and Hermione. I don't know what her last name is. They seem to be in love with Hagrid, the way that they look at him sometimes, especially at the end. I don't feel like they've developed the relationship between Hagrid and the children very well in these movies. Maybe it's better in the book, but there's not a lot of scenes of them, like, hanging out and bonding and becoming friends. He's just like another adult that they can ask questions to and, like, will take them from point A to point B. But I'm not really feeling the friendship between Hagrid and these children. Even at the end when Hagrid comes back in the middle of dinner, like, sorry I'm late, everybody, and, like, everybody loses their minds and they're all cheering, except for the Slytherin house. Like, Malfoy, like, nudges his friend who's about to start cheering to, hey, we're the asshole club. We're not supposed to be happy about the guy that everybody likes. So, yeah, that's weird. What else do we got? We've got, like I said, we've got a new character in Jenny, Ron's sister, which, like, if you were having a meeting and you were like, how do we make Ron Weasley even more of a beta cuck to Harry Potter? Because Harry Potter is not really much of an alpha dog either. So they've got to make Ron, like, even more pitiful than Harry Potter. So let's have Harry Potter fuck his sister someday. I assume that happens in one of the future movies. They seem to be setting that up. They also seem to be setting up a romance between Hermione and Ron Weasley, which came out of nowhere at the end of the movie when she comes back from getting whatever happened to her. She got frozen or petrified or something, and then she comes back, and then there's, like, one of those scenes where Ron Weasley, like, goes in for the kiss, and then they both, like, oh, close one there. We were almost overcome with emotion that we did the thing that we both clearly want to do. So that was weird. I never really saw any sparks between them before that. Ron Weasley is rendered impotent in this movie, in a way. He breaks his magic wand pretty early on in the movie, and he tries to scotch tape it back together. There's lots of beating up on Ron Weasley as the Malfoys would call him, like, when I was a child. Now, this is not a nice term, but I think if this came out when I was 11, 12 years old, everybody would be we would be calling Ron Weasley what was used to be referred to in the early 90s as a welfare bum. That's what we used to call everybody. Yeah, there are lots of comments about Ron Weasley broke his wand and his family sucks because they're gingers and they can't afford a new one. The whole family has dirt on their faces in the first movie. There's another scene of exciting back to school shopping, which I'm sure helps with the merch sales for Harry Potter. I heard that, like, I think May told me at Harry Potter Land at Disney, you can go and buy your custom wand, which I'm sure is quite the racket. But yeah, the whole Weasley family gets sneered at a lot by the classist Malfoys for having dirty clothes and used books. Gross. But yeah, that's weird. So as I mentioned, Hermione gets petrified, which happens to several people in the movie, and it seems like quite a leap to just avoid having people actually getting killed in this movie. To be like, every single one of these people ran into the bad guy and didn't look it directly in the eyes. It was like, this one was in a mirror, and this was off a bottle of water on the floor, and this one was through his camera. So they didn't have to actually kill anybody in this movie. But anyway, the story of it is the Chamber of Secrets has been opened, and only the secret heir of the Slytherin, I don't know, the proto-Slytherin can go into it. I'm not really sure what was supposed to happen spoiler alert, it turns out Voldemort was behind it, and he was, but he was going to kill Jenny and be in her corpse, and then maybe he was going to make it with Harry Potter. I'm not really sure how that's going to play out. Yeah, there's... What else do we got? And Ron's broken wand does get paid off later in the movie when the new teacher who replaced the one that was the bad guy in the first movie... I forget his character name, but played with a lot of flair by Kenneth Branagh, a Shakespearean actor who is his stage direction for this movie seemed to have been be a dandy. Just he's an author, kind of a blowhard, very full of himself. Day one of school, he gave everybody a quiz, which Hermione was very excited about. All of the quiz questions were various trivia, like what is his favorite color? And then, yeah, he ended up... I don't understand what happened with his big climactic thing. Was he going to kill Harry Potter and Ron Weasley just so that he could copy their story for a book? I'm not really sure what happened there, but anyway, he steals Ron's broken wand and tries to use it on them, but it backfires. He ends up wiping out his memory. There is an after credit scene where he is either trapped in a book or has written a book called Who Am I, because he doesn't have his memories. That was a weird addition to the thing. What else do I got in my notes here? We've got another brief appearance by John Cleese as nearly headless Nick. I like John Cleese, and his brief appearance was funny, where he's doing like a hat tip but pulling his own head off. I'm not really sure what the story on nearly headless Nick is. It's probably more fleshed out in the books. That's probably like a just fan service type thing. What else do we got that I haven't covered? This is harder. We've got Moaning Myrtle, another ghost, which I would like to propose that Moaning Myrtle should be like a Karen style thing that you call people that whine about stuff on the internet. Like if you send a form letter to a middle-aged politician and expect a kind, well thought out response, then perhaps you could call that person a Moaning Myrtle. Moaning Myrtle, she's there. She had a funny line about when they eventually open up the Chamber of Secrets, which is in the girls' bathroom, which is where Moaning Myrtle hangs out. And she does say to Harry before they go down there, like, if you die down there, you're welcome to share my toilet, which is a romantic flirt with Harry Potter. That seems pretty cool. What else do we got? Malfoy Senior seems to be the new Snape of this movie, just sneering along the edges. They more explicitly set him up as the bad guy for the next movie. He is in charge of Dobby, which I don't really understand how Dobby ended up in Harry Potter's house if he's working for Malfoy, and why Malfoy didn't want Harry Potter to come to the school, because Voldemort wanted Harry Potter to come because he wanted to kill him. But anyway, Dobby could only be set free if his master gave him some clothes, so Harry Potter slipped his cum sock inside the book and gave it to Dobby, so that, I don't know, that gave him some agency. More owl action. Harry Potter, I'm not sure why he has an owl. I assume it's his familiar or something, but they don't really do anything with that. He gets a name, Hedwig, which I remember we talked about on my four-story walk-up podcast with RF and Brian. They mentioned Hedwig. I forgot that was the name of the owl. But the owl doesn't really do anything. It's just a thing that Harry Potter needs to carry around with him quite a bit. I assume he'll have some more. At At one point, Dumbledore gets suspended because evil Malfoy just gathered up 12 signatures, which I guess is all it takes. Everybody in this movie, except for the bad guys, holds Dumbledore in very high regard. He's kind of the Gandalf of the movie. I'm not really sure why everybody loves Dumbledore. It's the same as Hagrid. Or Hagrid. He hasn't really done anything yet to just command this undying love and adoration from everybody around him. He hasn't really done anything cool yet. I'm sure it's coming, but it's not really clear why Harry Potter in particular loves him so much and defends him. Dumbledore's Phoenix Bird comes to help Harry Potter in the end, because Harry was so cool and loves Dumbledore so much. Dumbledore seems very like the Christian God, very full of himself, and will only help out Harry Potter if he pledges his undying allegiance to him. And luckily that phoenix did come to use some of its magical phoenix tears to cure Harry Potter's slight arm wound, which usually that same... Yeah, there's a lot of just crappier versions of, like, standard scenes from these type of movies. Like, at the end of it, Harry Potter, I feel like, should have just barely survived this encounter with the giant boss snake, which was definitely a much more exciting ending than the previous movie, where it was just Harry Potter standing in front of a mirror and the guy's like, "Hey, give me that rock in your pocket," and Harry Potter says, "No, and now I'm gonna touch your face and you're not gonna like it." The end. This one, he fights a big giant snake, and the only wound he suffers is a little scratch on his arm. Like, usually Harry Potter would be like near death and just barely beat the snake. But is he going to survive to bask in the glory of his victory? Oh, no, it's not looking good for Harry Potter. And then the phoenix tear cures him. But he didn't seem to really be in that much trouble to begin with. I've got in my notes Professor McGonagall. I really hate the names of everybody in this movie. McGonagall and Dumbledore and Hufflepuff. I just don't like the terminology used. Is very goofy. But the lady that... I don't know what else she's been in, but she seems like a dignified British actress, and it seems very undignified to have this... maybe it's just because she has the British accent, but I feel like this is like a Shakespearean actor wearing a silly witch hat all the time. It seems very undignified. What else do we got? There's the flying car that the Weasleys rescued Harry Potter at the beginning. I feel like them driving around and screaming and having the wild ride in the car at the beginning was supposed to be a big set piece, but it didn't really connect to me. But after it crashed into the magical woods, it turned into the Roger Rabbit car, and it just like pulls up and like, "Hey, get in here," when they're in trouble, and then it just goes back out into the secret forest. What else? Malfoy, I've got written down, I already said this, he's set up as the next villain. I like the nice touch of he has a magical wand built into his cane, in the same way that like a bad guy in a movie would pull the handle out of his cane and there'd be like a sword or a knife. He's got a magic wand. I felt like that was a nice touch. At the end, all of the exams were canceled and everybody in the hall cheers, except for Hermione, because she really likes quizzes, because she's the nerd one. This is a magic school. I feel like they should take their studies more seriously. They should probably have an exam at the end, because you know these are deadly magical abilities. But anyway, I thought we were setting up when they sent Hagrid to Azkaban prison that in the next movie, because I know there's one coming up. I don't know if it's the next one or not. Called Prisoner of Azkaban. So I thought that we were going to have, like, it was going to be like The Rock, the movie, with, like, Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage, only it was going to be Harry Potter having to break into Azkaban prison to break out Hagrid. That was a movie I was looking forward to, but Hagrid got released. But yeah, that's all I have. I was disappointed. I thought there's a lady that's sitting at, like, the dais at the end of the movie. I think she's a nurse or something. She works with the sprout lady that grew the the mandrake roots, I think. Where they cured all of the petrified people off screen. I thought maybe it was Mink Stole from, like, Pink Flamingos and a bunch of other John Waters movies, but I did a Google search for Mink Stole and Harry Potter and came up with squat other than advertisements for Mink Stoles. That's a tough name to Google. But I don't think it was her. That would have been a weird addition to the Harry Potter franchise if Mink Stole was in it. Yeah, anyway, so I believe that's all I have to say about Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. He found the chamber. I'm not sure what the secret was. Voldemort, they stabbed his diary. He came back as as close to the British can come up with as a teen idol. Anyway, he had a floppy David Miles Hall style haircut. But anyway, that's The Chamber of Secrets. A very similar movie to the first one, but a bit better. It's a good second run at it. This was, again, the extended version, which was too long. I did not think to go and look up what the differences were in the time, but I assume it's all very minor stuff like it was last time. The last movie, the extended version, was only an extra 7 minutes of mostly inconsequential stuff. Again, very long. The pacing is good, though. I don't feel like I was ever bored. So, anyway, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. I liked it more than the first one. And we'll see what I think of the next one whenever I record it. I don't know when that's going to be. Tomorrow is No Jokes Barred in a Parking Lot, so I've got to figure out what I'm going to do for that. So probably not tomorrow, maybe Sunday. Anyway, signing off for this magic moment, I'm John Forward. Thanks for listening.
Than a summer's night, so please, baby, so please, save the last dance.